Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Test 1, 2. Test 1, 2. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor. And in this show, I break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Okay, everybody, welcome to episode 2, technically episode 3, but episode 2 for the Utes for this season. This week we have got the University of Utah Utes heading down to Pasadena to play the UCLA Bruins in the Rose Bowl. This is a pretty exciting season opener for both schools. Previous Pac-12 opponents now been split up into the Big 10 and Big 12. This is an opportunity for two teams that both went 5-7 last year to rebound and try to show their true colors, show to their new conferences that they are more than what they showed last year. Pretty poor showings for both teams. Both teams have a really amazing history, story of success, and both teams, you know, really upset with and disappointed by their performance last year. So the Utes, as we talked about in the preseason preview, still led by Coach Kyle Whittingham, whose contract goes through 2026, with head coach in waiting, Morgan Scally, as a defensive coordinator. New offensive coordinator Jason Beck and his quarterback Devin Dampier looking to lead the Utes offense into a resurgence, both in the rushing and in the passing game. For a lot of folks, Devin Dampier and Wayshawn Parker, two transfer athletes that came from out of town, are hoping to be the keys to success for an offense that struggled last year. A lot of folks point to the amazing lineup that the Utes have on the offensive line. You have guys like Spencer Fano, who is a top 5 projected NFL draft target, let's say. You have other long-term guys, long-term veterans, guys like Michael Mokofisi, Jared Kump, and Caleb Lomu, guys that have played before on the offensive line. A lot of people saying that the University of Utah's offensive line is going to be top 5 in the country, definitely top offensive line in the entire Big 12. So, you know, that offense is looking to, like I said, kind of have a resurgence this year. Let's look and see how they're going to match up historically against this UCLA defense. Now, this UCLA defense is going to be a little bit different than we've seen, at least what most Utes, Utah fans have seen over the last couple of years in the Pac-12. There's also a change, by the way, in head coach. So Chip Kelly is the head coach that we've been used to playing against when we go down to Pasadena or when they come up to Utah. There's a new head coach by the name of Deshaun Foster, who stepped into Chip Kelly's spot in February of 2024. guided the Bruins through their first season in the Big Ten. Like I said, taking them to a 5-7 record with wins against programs like Iowa, Nebraska, and Rutgers, but dropping games against basically everybody else that was good in the Big Ten. As far as the defense is concerned, there is defensive coordinator Ikaika Maloe, who's been a member of the UCLA coaching staff since 2021. His history includes being a defensive coordinator at Yale from 2009 to 2011, a brief stint as a defensive line coach at Utah State in 2014, until he went to Washington in 2016. Washington, he also coached defensive line and did step into a co-defensive coordinator role during his time there at Washington. Before moving on to UCLA in 2021, also defensive line coach, where he made the move up to defensive coordinator last year in 2024, where the Bruins ranked top six nationally in run defense. So looking a lot at the film from last year, the film that I'm going to focus on mostly today was film from UCLA's game against, at the time, ranked number 16 LSU in 2024. Notable players to be aware of, starting on the defensive line, they have defensive tackles, I believe. Well, excuse me, one defensive tackle, Siale Taupaki, who was 6'4", 335 pounds as a junior, who's looking to hold up the middle of that defensive line. And on the edge, returning to the Bruins, at number 44, Devin Aupiu. I probably butchered that. Aupiu, who is 6'5", 270. And as a senior, is pretty quick on the edge there. They have a number of linebackers that are returning, none of whom really got any playing time last year, or at least not much playing time, at least not on the film that I watched against LSU. Number 9, Jalen Woods, who is 6'1", 225-pound junior. Number 6, John Vaughns, 6'1", 225, senior. The exact same size, the two of those guys. They also have two linebackers who were slated to play, who are transfers. Number 32, Isaiah Chisholm, 6'1", 235, a sophomore from Oregon State. And number 10, Ben Perry, 6'3", 210, a senior from Louisville. Honestly, didn't really get a whole lot of film, like I said, on any of these defensive linemen or linebackers. This front six, is kind of a question mark for me at this point. I wish I had more time to watch film. But I think one main story here is you got a bunch of guys that are transfers, a bunch of guys that are stepping into to positions, who maybe were rotators last year, but not guys that were holding down starting spots, that are stepping up against one of the best offensive lines in the country, and for sure the best offensive line in the Big 12. So look for the Utes offensively to dominate that line of scrimmage. But at the same time, I don't, if you look at the film from last year, the defensive front for UCLA in this game against LSU was fairly solid. As we noted, they were top six in run defense, and it holds up in that film against LSU. Their front four were solid and strong. Their linebackers were quick to make good run pass reads off of the offensive line's first steps. They weren't slow off the ball. They were fast off the ball. They were decisive. They squeezed down really well. They were able to put a little bit of a pass pressure against LSU, but at the end of the day, the defensive backfield was just too weak to hold off the Tigers. But look for that to be a big story there. The UCLA defensive line and linebackers against the University of Utah's really solid offensive line. looking at the defensive backs, same deal, even less film available on these defensive backs, mostly because of my limited time. The fact that almost every single one of their projected starters is a transfer from a different school. Just to give you an idea of how much work UCLA did in the transfer portal this year, here are their expected starters at contributors at defensive back. Number 23, Brian Threats, which is a cool last name, by the way, 5'10", 185-pound senior from UCF. At safety, number 4, Key Lawrence, 6', 200-pound senior from Ole Miss. Number 2, Andre Jordan Jr., 6'1", 175, junior from Oregon State. And number 3, Robert Stafford III, 5'11", 185-pound sophomore from Miami. So UCF, Ole Miss, Oregon State, and Miami, four different schools where they're pulling their defensive backfield from. You know, Utah is slated to have not an exceedingly strong receiving core coming into this year. They have a lot of guys that are looking to make a name for themselves, though. So this will be a really interesting matchup as well. You've got a lot of talent coming into UCLA from around the country, but are they going to be able to become a cohesive unit? Are they going to be able to maintain coverage on, you know, we didn't have very much film on a lot of these new receivers from Utah, but, and I know it's a spring game, but are they going to have enough ability to cover a decent looking incoming receiving core from Utah with Utah's offensive line buying as much time for Devin Dampier as they're going to be able to buy? Plus the fact that Devin, you know, on his feet is pretty quick and able to buy himself a lot of time. He was only sacked 5 times last year, and that's not 5 times against, you know, G5 schools, that's or even Power 4 schools. That's 5 times all year at all. So, you know, if this defensive backfield is going to struggle.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
But all to find an identity or to find a cohesive effort, you know, to defend the University of Utah's receiving core, it could be a long night through the air as well. Generally speaking, Coach Maloy, Ika Maloy, he runs a lot of nickel formation, which for those of you that are new to football, a nickel formation is a defensive formation which is made up of 4 defensive linemen, 2 linebackers, and 5 defensive backs. Those 5 defensive backs being a corner on either side, a free safety up high, a strong safety on the other side up high, and then a nickel back, which is kind of like something between a safety and a cornerback that floats around and just kind of covers wherever there needs to be extra coverage, kind of in the middle between the middle of the field and the boundary of the field, so kind of on the hash marks. So they run a lot of 4-2-5. For the first little while against LSU, they ran a lot of cover 2, which, again, we talked about this last week, but a cover 2 is a basic pass coverage. It's a zone coverage where your man's going to cover a zone rather than a single man. You're going to have the free safety up high and the strong safety up high, which are going to drop deep into the 2 large halves of the field. They're going to cover those deep halves, make sure no one goes deep to score. And then your corners, your nickelback, and your linebackers are going to cover 4 or 5 zones and kind of the shallow to mid-depth zones all across, you know, from sideline to sideline to make sure that nothing can come short or moderate depth into the middle of the field or the boundary. Coach Maloy likes to disguise this coverage a lot as cover 1, or making it look like a man coverage. He does that with his alignments, you know, guys lining up like they're man-to-man, and then last minute before the snap, they spring back to, they sprint back to their positions to get back into coverage, which ends up with a lot of these, you know, deeper safeties having their backs turned as they're sprinting back into their deep half. Sometimes the, you know, you'll have cornerback or the nickelback maybe pretending to follow a receiver in motion and then shifting back to their normal coverage. So look, you know, what's one thing Devin Dampier will have to look for is being sure that he doesn't just take his pre-snap read as far as what coverage he thinks he's throwing against, but really having to go through his reads and see where the defensive backfield is actually going as he's going through his progressions. Much less frequently out of this 4-2-5 coverage, a pure 4-2-5 coverage, will he run a cover 1, and even less than that, a cover 3, but they will run them occasionally when the down and distance calls for it. The second most common defensive formation that you're going to see from UCLA this week will be what I've called, and again, I will have to have my old defensive coordinator, Gary Bowers, probably correct me on a lot of these. This is just my understanding. It's a 4-2-5 bear. which basically means you have the same number of players, four defensive linemen, two linebackers, five defensive backs. But in this case, we've brought up the two linebackers onto the line. So it's almost like a six-man front with then five defensive backs in the defensive backfield. And what that does is it confuses the quarterback as far as who is going to be coming in for pass cover, for pass rush, or to fill run gaps, and who is going to be dropping back into coverage. Occasionally, those linebackers will kind of be feigning a blitz, and then at the line of scrimmage, and then last minute will drop back into their normal coverages. Sometimes they'll actually bring the linebacker, and then they'll drop the defensive end into like a middle zone or maybe a flat zone, something like that. And they have run those coverages against LSU out of that bear formation, a cover one where the linebacker will blitz and the defensive end drops into that kind of the middle zone, which we call a robber zone, a low robber with the safety dropping into a high robber. Just a regular cover one with the linebacker robber and the safety. So basically everyone is covering man except for one linebacker is going to sit middle zone, and then the free safety will sit high zone on top. Okay. So some basic cover ones out of that 4-2-5 bear formation, or what basically looks like a 6-5 formation. Okay. They'll run some blitzes out of it. They did run in a couple short yarded situations or third or fourth down or red zone situations where they would run that cover one and then they'd blitz their backers, all of them. So they will run that occasionally. And then they did actually break out a really interesting formation as well, a 3-3 stack, which means they have three down defensive linemen and three linebackers. And rather than everyone lining up in their own gaps to cover, you have the nose guard line up right on the center. The middle linebacker lines up right behind him. The left defensive end would line up kind of as a shade outside the left guard and inside. It'd be the left defensive end would be on the offensive right guard or right tackle and vice versa. Okay. And basically you got those three down defensive linemen, and then behind them, those three linebackers are stacked perfectly on them. And it kind of, again, for the quarterback, creates some doubt as to where those defensive players are going to be going, which gaps are going to be covering. Are they going to be twisting? Are they going to be slanting? Are the linebackers going to come in for a blitz? Are they not? Are they sending three? Are they sending four? Are they sending five? Are they sending all six of them on a blitz? It's hard to know. Okay, so that was a really interesting formation that you're going to see out of UCLA. They actually brought that out in the second half against LSU when they started, I think, kind of running out of success. They started having less success with their base 4-2-5 and 4-2-5 bear formations. Okay, so that's basically it. From the defensive line standpoint, you maybe see a couple defensive tackle twists, which mean, you know, rather than everyone just going straight forward and into the gap ahead of them, maybe I would cut left and then the defensive tackle to my left would wrap around behind me to the right, things like that. Or maybe a full slant to the left or slant to the right, which is everyone's going to go to the left and then the defensive end that's way on the left is going to wrap all the way back around to the right and go around the end there, trying to create some confusion. Usually you try to do that on passing downs. You don't want to do that a lot on running downs, because it creates a lot of potential for them to run either right at your blitz or right away from your blitz, which is they're both equally challenging because it creates a lot of mismatches with your gap coverage. Like I mentioned before, a couple of linebacker blitzes, sending one or two, or in the case where they have three linebackers, all three linebackers. So they don't blitz a ton. They tend to like to stay in a lot of those base coverages. Like I mentioned, when Coach Maloy is so committed to the high cover two, at least in their film against LSU in the first quarter, there's a lot of room behind the first line of coverage, behind that first zone coverage, where the defensive backs have to turn their shoulders so aggressively to get into their deep half that it leaves a ton of room, you know, between 12 and 15 yards downfield between the hash marks and the numbers. They also, later in the film against LSU, started to open up a lot of holes between zones, when LSU went rapid fire against the cover two. Lots of running back checkdowns, seam hitches, which is basically a hitch that's kind of, again, not dead center of the field, but not quite out by the numbers either. A lot of crossing routes, in routes or drags, outside hitches to the wide receiver, etc. So, you know, that's where I would focus my attack. If I were Jason Beck, and I'm assuming that's where Jason Beck is going to focus a lot of his attack with the passing game. That is, until they shift towards their bare front, where Coach Maloye would typically run more cover one. This is a good defense, you know, but their tendencies should give Devin Dampier the opportunity to adapt, depending on what they give him. And you know, Utah's destiny this season depends on Devin's ability to adapt. This is where Devin will show how valuable he will or won't be to the Utes this season. Flipping it around on the other side of the ball, going to UCLA's offense. The big story, Eric Bieniemy is out as offensive coordinator, and Tino Sunseri, the offensive coordinator for Indiana from last year, is in. Now, Tino Sunseri, as offensive coordinator at Indiana, was the mastermind behind Indiana's sweetheart season in the Big Ten last year. They went 11-2, eventually losing to Notre Dame in the first round of the college football playoff. When Sunseri came in, Indiana improved in every metric from 2023 to 2024. They went from 18.5 points per game to, get this, 47.5 points per game, 317 yards per game to 515 yards of offensive production every game, average. 4.8 yards per play increased to 7.5 yards. They had 7 rushing touchdowns in 2023, which improved to 23 touchdowns in 2024. They had, in 2023, they had 10 plays of 25-plus yards, which improved to 24, almost 2.5 times as many 25-yard-plus plays. So the big story, like I was going to say, Tennessee transfer Nico Iamaleava, 6'6". I had no idea he was this tall or this big. 6'6", 215 pounds. He's only a sophomore. He was a true freshman when he started for Tennessee. He had a bit of a falling out with Tennessee this last offseason over NIL money and transferred to UCLA, prompting previous UCLA starter Joey Aguilar to switch him spots. And can I just say, you know, after watching some film from Nico from last year in Tennessee, I mean, this guy can do it all. I mean, he is a true pocket passer at heart. But if he needs to, he can roll out. He can run. You know, just based on the film that I watched last year, from last year, I don't know if SEC defenses knew how to defend post routes last year. But, man, this guy threw touchdown after touchdown on him. He likes to throw a lot of crossing routes, a lot of horizontal stretching routes like slants, posts, deep in routes, which we would call a dig, crossing routes where a receiver runs from maybe one side and then he kind of gets more and more deep, maybe 5, maybe 10, maybe 15 yards deep as he runs to the other sideline. And he does fairly well with vertically stretching routes as well, routes like a seam route, which is just basically running kind of straight up the hash marks. And then a fade, which is just a long streak down the sideline. I'd say his touch and his placement on these throws are incredible. Think of like the perfect spot a ball could be, the optimal trajectory for every single one of those routes I just mentioned. He puts it there almost every time, or at least he did last year at Tennessee. It helped that he had incredible receivers who were fast off the ball and able to get across the face of their defenders really well. But, man, this guy can sit in the pocket, he can go through his progressions, and he can deliver. He can scramble, but he doesn't scramble unless he absolutely needs to. And when he does, he is quick and elusive. And he can do all of that at 6'6". So, you know, for the Utes to be successful against UCLA in the Rose Bowl this week, the defensive backfield has to bottle up the Bruins' receiving core, and the defensive line must contain Nico. I wouldn't be surprised to see Morgan Scalley use one of his linebackers as a spy for Nico. And what that means is basically this linebacker has no other responsibility besides just to sit in the middle and watch Nico. If Nico is going to pass, then he can go ahead and rush up and try to stop the pass. But it's his responsibility to contain him. If it's a running play, you know, sure, he can go attack the runner. But his number one goal is to make sure that Nico doesn't pull on an option play and run up the other side of the field. So I wouldn't be surprised to see if Morgan Scalley uses one of his linebackers as a spy just for Nico, much like Alabama did last year for so much of their game against Tennessee. As I mentioned, you know, it's going to be super important for the defensive line to contain Nico. The University of Utah, you know, as we kind of mentioned, we lost a lot of guys on the defensive line last year. We lost guys like Connor O'Toole. We lost guys like Van Fillinger, Simote Pepa, just a lot of guys that made up basically the identity of our defensive line. And we got a lot of new guys stepping in. We still have Logan Fano, right, our 6'5", 250-pound junior, number zero. But, you know, it's just, it's going to present a challenge. I think that's going to be maybe one of the weak spots for the University of Utah in this game, is how their defensive line is going to match up against not only UCLA's offensive line, but against this very talented quarterback, Nico Iamaleava. So, jumping then now to, you know, the University of Utah's defensive backfield's ability to hold down this UCLA receiving core. We've got a couple familiar faces here at wide receiver. Number one, the most familiar face, maybe not their most offensively productive receiver this year, but one that we should all recognize here at Rice-Eccles Stadium, is number seven, Mikey Matthews. That's right, a familiar face, former Ute, who transferred to Cal in 2024. And then this coming season, or for this current season, he has transferred to UCLA. He is 5'9", 180 pounds. He's now a junior. He was, again, a great pass catcher for the University of Utah. He's looking to make some waves here in Pasadena. Other receivers to keep an eye out for, two returning receivers from UCLA. Number three, Kwasi Gilmer. Number three, like I said, 6'2", 190 pounds. He's a sophomore. And then number two, this is a, let me see if I can get this right, Titus Mokiau Atemalala. I think I got that right. 6'1", 190 pound senior. He also returns for the Bruins. I think the biggest thing to make out of this passing attack from UCLA is going to be Nico's ability to place the ball wherever his receivers need it to be. If these guys can even run a somewhat decent route and are able to break away from actually what I consider to be quite a talented defensive backfield in Utah that returns a lot of players that have lots of playing experience or starting experience, then, you know, UCLA can be pretty dominant, can be pretty dangerous. But like I said, this defensive backfield for the University of Utah returns guys the likes of number 15, Tao Johnson, number 6, formerly number 31, Nate Ritchie, and a new transfer, highly touted number 1, Rabbit Evans at safety. Those are three safeties, you know, that, again, can pose a lot of, pose a lot of problems for a quarterback like Nico Iamaleava. You have guys like Smith Snowden as well that can fill that spot either there at safety or at corner. Guys like Elijah Davis at cornerback. Elijah, we didn't get to see a whole lot of last year because he tore his ACL, I think it was, very early in the year. But now he's back and rearing and ready to go. Okay. From a running perspective from UCLA, they have a couple running backs to pay attention to. First of all, though, number one to be aware of, UCLA finished the season last year ranked 132nd in the nation in rushing last fall. So not exceedingly great. That, if anything, I guess kind of bodes well for the new University of Utah defensive line. Number 21, Javian Thomas, 5'11", 195-pound junior, transfer from Cal. He must have come up with Mikey Matthews. As well as returning running back number 0, Jalen Berger, who is 6'2", 225 pounds, quite a bit larger than Javian Thomas, more of a bruiser. You've got a pretty good duo there. Usually it's very typical to see that in football, one running back who's maybe a little bit smaller and quicker and able to kind of fit through some smaller holes versus another bigger kind of bruiser running back. He's got a little bit more height, a little bit more meat that he can kind of run over people. The offensive line, again, another piece of this transfer portal puzzle here at UCLA. They've got two returning veterans, number 72, Garrett DiGiorgio, who is 6'7", 320 pounds, and he is not their biggest lineman by a long shot. You also have number 64, Sam Yoon, at the center position, who is 315 pounds, 6'5". He's a junior and is returning. They've also got three more tackles and guards that are transfers from Kentucky, Florida State, and Oklahoma, all of whom are 315 pounds, 320 pounds, and 340 pounds. Some big boys for sure. Offensively, like I mentioned earlier, you know, it's going to be interesting to see kind of the combination of Nico Iamaleava and the routes that he likes to throw with the offense that Tino Sunseri ran in Indiana. They're very different in the routes that they choose to throw. As I mentioned with Nico, he likes lots of horizontal crossing routes, routes that are usually meant to cut through zone defenses, okay? Slants, posts, deep in routes, which we'd call a dig. And then he does do well with those vertically stretching routes, as I mentioned before, seam routes and fades. Generally speaking, when you look at Sunseri's offense, first of all, as far as formations go, you see a lot of trips, okay? Trips right, trips left, usually kind of spread out, not so many bunches or trios, but you see a lot of that. From a passing perspective, you see a lot of timing routes, hitches, swing passes. You see a lot of like slot backs that are running out routes that are based on the timing of the route there. You see a couple in routes, a couple middle screens, and what we call an angle route, which is where the running back runs from the backfield, kind of runs out to the tackle, and then cuts back to the left, almost like a slant from a running back out of the backfield. So a lot of different types of routes that you would not see Nico throw last year at Tennessee. You know, they have a couple cool run-pass option plays that they do. They have one really cool one that you look out for, which is called an RPO shark, which is where basically you run a triple option where the quarterback, you know, he can either hand the ball off to the running back or keep it. And then when he starts running it, you know, as soon as the defensive backfield starts to commit and pursue up to him, the wide receiver way out on the boundary, he doesn't block. He just sits back and stays open. And then as soon as the cornerback either runs up to the quarterback, then the quarterback just throws it out to the now open wide receiver, or that defensive back has to respect the option and he has to stay out there on the receiver, which leaves a little more room for the quarterback to try to, you know, get upfield basically. So they run that, which is pretty fun. From a running perspective, they don't run a ton. And again, at least not in the film that I watched with them against LSU. They run a lot of basic patterns. Okay. An off tackle lead. They run inside zone, outside zone, a little bit of down block stuff, all out of the backfield. They did run one, kind of weak side outside sweep, you know, where they pull all the guards and tackles and everything and try to pitch it outside. But again, very, very sparse. This is an offense that likes to pass the ball. They're going to put the ball in the hands of Nico. It's going to be an exciting game. When it comes to red zone offense, again, they ran that run pass option shark play. They like to run that little halfback angle, again, where the running back runs out from the backfield, out to the tackle, and then cuts back like a slant route. They ran that in red zone situations against LSU. And then they also ran a middle wide receiver screen where they basically, a screen play for those of you that are new to football, is one where you basically let the defensive line through and make them think they're going to get the quarterback. But then when you think about it, all those defensive linemen are now through. If you can pass the ball over their heads, now your receiver has got a wall or a line of offensive linemen ready to block all the linebackers and defensive backs behind them. So they tried to run basically a middle screen to the wide receiver, which was picked apart by LSU. But it is a good idea when you're down that far into the red zone, and teams like Utah with defensive coordinators like Morgan Scalley are going to want to put pressure on you in those situations. So, you know, the Utes have to be smart defensively as well as aggressive. I think that pretty much covers everything, what you should expect to see, players you should keep your eye out for. I think this is going to be a really good game. I think it's going to be an opportunity for Utah to prove that they're back. Okay. I could see a world where this game is a really tight game. And I personally think that's how it's going to be. I could see a world where Utah, you know, wins by a lot of points. You know, the over and under on this game is 51.5, which is a lot. It's a lot of points. The spread is Utah by 6.5, which means they're really actually expecting Utah to be the better team by about 10 points. They usually give the home team home field advantage, which is about 3 points. So, you know, if Utah wins by a touchdown, that evens out to what everyone's thinking. But it's very possible that in this game, Utah ends up winning by, you know, 14 points or 17 points. But it could be a game where, you know, I think in every metric except for ESPN, and if you ask me my opinion on the ESPN, the FPI, or their power matchup predictor, whatever it's called, I think ESPN's stats are horrible. I think ESPN's stats are swayed by their ownership of the SEC network and their fascination with the Big Ten. But, you know, this is a game where almost every metric, every unbiased metric, except for a couple, pick Utah to win this game by about 6 to 10 points. A couple of the statisticians think that UCLA could cover and either lose by 6 or less, or there's a world where UCLA plays pretty well and they upset the Utes. But as of right now, the Utes are favored in this game. I think they're going to win this game 31-14. I think they hold UCLA, you know, really, really well. I think the defensive line, you know, very generally speaking, Utah has a history of developing young players and making, you know, all these guys that we're going to miss from this last year, they were freshmen at 1.2. They were underclassmen at 1.2. You know, I think we're going to have a couple guys that are going to step up into big roles. We have a solid defensive backfield. We have a super solid offensive line, a new quarterback, new running back, a hungry receiving core that are ready and wanting to prove themselves, and then just a whole coaching staff in general that are wanting to redeem themselves from a poor 5-7 showing, and they want to send Coach Whittingham out on a good note. So I think the Utes are going to prevail 31-14. And we are so far 20 minutes shorter than last week's episode. My goal each week is to make this show shorter and shorter and more informative. So I'll wrap up really quickly. Two quick things to wrap up. Number one, any of the listeners that are golf fans, want to give a shout out to Tommy Fleetwood. Amazing, amazing golfer, amazing guy. One of the most talented and best performing golfers in the PGA, but has been winless thus far until this last weekend when he won the FedEx Cup playoffs, which culminates in the PGA Tour Championship. He beat a very likable opponent in Patrick Cantlay. And just couldn't be happy for Tommy. So shout out to Tommy. And then number two, I think it's kind of a fun thing to do each week where we have a little question. Last week, which by the way, nobody responded to me. So either nobody listened last week or nobody wanted to answer my question. Last week's question was, what are your favorite football movies or TV shows to watch? I told you guys that Friday Night Lights, I remember the Titans were my two most favorites. I had three or four others. But so let me know what they are. Let's review those answers. And then this week's question is, who are your three most favorite fictional football players? You think of the likes of, you know, from Remember the Titans, guys like Gary Bertier, Julius Campbell, guys from Friday Night Lights, who I guess really aren't so fictional because they're actually based on real people from the 1988 football team. But Mike Winchell, guys that are definitely fake from the movie Longest Yard, guys like Meggett, the running back, was played by Nelly. Paul Crewe, Cheeseburger Eddie, the guy that always has a McDonald's, McDonald's hookup on the inside. me personally, some of my favorites include Gary Bertier and Julius Campbell from Remember the Titans. They have to come as a pair. I feel like they should count as one, I think. So I'm going to put them as number one. Number two, I love Mike Winchell. from Friday Night Lights. He's just the epitome of a guy, a kid, really, who puts his head down, works hard for the team, does what's asked of him, and doesn't, you know, doesn't seek his own. And then, oh gosh, it's so hard to pick. I would say another duo. I'm going to cheat and do a twofer. The quarterbacks from Remember the Titans, Sunshine and Louis Harris, the Rev, are my favorite, number three favorite fictional football players. So let me know what yours are. I'm glad to be here again this week. I hope you can prevail. Hope you all have a good one. Thanks for listening. Bye.